two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome into the Jazz Notes podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. You can read me at kslsports.com. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. That's also where you can find me on Instagram. You can find KSL Sports on Twitter at KSL Sports, on Instagram at KSL Sports, and also on Facebook at KSL Sports. Appreciate you tuning in. I do this every week. I generally do it every Friday. Here's how I like to do it. I go back over some of the big stories concerning the Utah Jazz throughout the week that I've written at kslsports.com, other big stories that are breaking. Right now, it's obviously big in the NBA draft, so I'm giving you a breakdown on some prospects that I've looked at this week. And then also, I finish the podcast by answering your mailbag questions. So that's why it's important to follow me at Ben's Hoops so you can submit your questions. Let's start with the big story today, and that's that the NBA is still aiming to potentially start the season on Christmas Day, if not sooner. That news first broke by ESPN. Mark Stein also wrote about it, or at least had a tweet about it. And then Sham Sharania from The Athletic followed up by saying that not only might it start by Christmas, it might start on December 22nd, which would be very soon. I'm recording this on October 23rd, a Friday. So that would be a little under 2 months from right now to get the NBA season started, which is just insanely rapid. It feels like the season just ended. But when there's that much money on the line, when teams are starting to realize that we're probably not all that close to figuring out how to get 20,000 fans in an arena, the more games you play, the more television exposure you have, the more advertising you have, the more money you have. And right now, the NBA is going to be in kind of a panic mode when it comes to figuring out how much money they can bring back or save from this last season where they lost a bunch by not having fans in the stadiums. By not being able to get eight teams back to compete for a playoff chase over the last month of the season when they returned in Orlando, and then just not having anyone at the finals games, at the playoff games. It's been a big loss. It's going to hurt the NBA financially, even though the bubble certainly worked and did exactly what it was supposed to and saved a bunch of money for the league. They still lost a considerable amount. So getting back, starting the season in late December, seems like the goal right now. It's amazing to see how quickly these come together, and generally when the NBA starts to put their focus like this together, it seems like these things happen. So don't be at all surprised if maybe by this time next month, which we're talking Thanksgiving, NBA teams are getting back together, just finishing free agency, even though it will have just started, and trying to get their training camp underway. Let's talk about a couple of those issues first, though. We know the NBA draft is set for November 18th. At this point, it's probably too late to change that. The NBA could open up free agency before that. There's really no reason why they couldn't. I know they traditionally have done the draft first and the free agency after. There's actually been a big push in NBA circles to switch those around anyways. That way you go out and you sign the players that can help you win now, and then you understand what you have, what you don't have, and you draft for need at that point. I actually don't think it matters all that much. You probably shouldn't be drafting for need in the first place. It happens. Unless you're a team that's really close to winning a championship and there just happens to be a guy who fits exactly what you need where you're drafting, I think that makes sense. But otherwise, you should probably be drafting best player available. I know that's cliche, But rookies don't come in and help you win games. So you should go out and sign players in free agency to help you win games and then hope that the guy you drafted a year or two down the line is ready to step in and be a rotation player and just make the NBA and then make an impact, which is why you go best player available. So you could potentially move free agency before the draft. There's no talk about that right now. I wouldn't rule it out at this point if teams are concerned that they have to have these players in their cities, in their host cities, signed, ready to go by the time training camp opens. And that could be late November. That could be November 25th, 26th, 27th, maybe December 1st. But you remember when the NBA restarted in Orlando, they had players come back to their host cities in late June. I want to say it was like June 23rd or June 24th. They were doing individual workouts while quarantining a little bit. They were getting tested every day. Then they returned to a mini training camp for a few days in their host cities before traveling to Orlando on the 7th, 8th, and 9th of July. And then they were playing by the 30th of July. So they had about 3 weeks of full-on training camp on site. Doesn't sound like they're going to be doing on site. I can't imagine they're going to set up a bubble that quickly. I can't imagine they're going to ask players to leave their families again. And that's a really good thing. But that means training camp would have to open up in 4 weeks or so if they want to have this done accurately. So keep an eye on that. That's going to be really close. Some of the things we're going to lose as a result, probably not going to be having an all-star game this year. That was supposed to be in Indianapolis. Adrian Wojnarowski reported that. That's not a major surprise. Adding extra travel dates is dangerous. Sending players home in the middle of the season to potentially contract coronavirus, if we still have it around in February, which I imagine we will, that's dangerous, and the NBA doesn't want to see any more delays. So that's probably going to be gone. You're only going to have 72 games, maybe 70 games, it sounds like, which I'm actually a fan of. You're already going to have a condensed season with a short training camp after a quick turnaround. The more wear and tear on these bodies, the worse it's going to be for injuries. So if you can give these guys normal schedules with days off, like you usually do, instead of having to play several back-to-backs or even back-to-back-to-backs, I think that's a good sign for the NBA. So there's certainly some things the league can do to make this more feasible, more plausible, and they're going to look under all those rocks and figure out how to do it. I trust Adam Silver. He's shown a great ability to do it over this last year. They'll do it again this year. You will see games canceled, though, due to coronavirus if they're trying to play a full 82 or full 70-game schedule with teams traveling and playing in different cities. Major League Baseball's on an incredible run right now, and I know they're in the World Series, but it's been like 40 days since they've had a positive test. It's been really incredible. The NFL, seeming like every day, has to move a game, and they only play every week because guys are testing positive. College football games get canceled every weekend because guys test positive. It's going to happen in the NBA. They're going to have to figure out how to navigate it, but other leagues are kind of laying the groundwork on what to do, and Major League Baseball will probably be what the NBA looks at most closely. So keep an eye on that, but that could be cool. Could be fun to have NBA back as soon as Christmas Day. I have a hard time imagining it would be any sooner. It's just going to be such a time crunch, but we will probably know more about that in the next week by October 30th, when I'll be recording this podcast next week. The owners and the players are going to have to gather together and figure out what they're going to do with the next CBA. That's kind of the deadline to make sure they don't enter another lockout. So keep an eye on that. Going to be a big story. And of course, I'll have all your coverage at kslsports.com. It's a good story. I feel bad for the NBA players not getting a long time off, but they're trying to save money and they make tons of money. So they're going to be just fine. All right, let's turn our attention a little bit to quickly. Donovan Mitchell appeared with Kamala Harris, the vice presidential nominee, on Tuesday night for Players TV. They ended up posting it to YouTube earlier. Not going to get into the politics of it. I don't really care on that aspect on this podcast. But Jazz fans, I know you may not agree, some of you, with what Donovan's saying. I know some of you love it. I see it in both of them in my mentions. Donovan Mitchell's a superstar in the sense that he's talking to a vice presidential candidate 2 weeks before a general election. It doesn't get bigger than that. So for all this question in the past that, you know, Gordon Hayward left because he wanted to be in a bigger market, or Darren Williams left because he wanted to be in a bigger market, guys wanted to be seen, guys wanted to have power, guys wanted to have a voice. Donovan Mitchell's doing it as high as you can in the world. You know, he's talking to potentially the second most powerful person in the world as of a couple of weeks from now. And he was doing that with CJ McCollum and Tobias Harris, who Philadelphia is a big market, but it's not super. It's not New York. It's not L.A., and CJ McCollum's from Portland. You can have this type of voice now in the social media era that you want and live in Salt Lake City. That's a good sign for the Utah Jazz. Even if you don't like who we sat down with, it's a good sign that you can have this power, you can have voice, you can have this attention drawn to you, you can be a superstar in Salt Lake City. And Donovan Mitchell's kind of drawing the game plan as he goes on how to do it. It's fascinating. It's worth watching, and it's a good sign for Jazz, for the Jazz organization and for Jazz fans. If Donovan Mitchell can do it in Utah, other players can do it in Utah, and you'll probably see more of it as he continues to see his star grow, and that's a good sign for Jazz fans. You can read my article on that at kslsports.com. All right, three NBA draft prospects I want to get into really quick that I reviewed this week. All of them are projected maybe a little bit of ahead right now in most mock drafts of where the Jazz are looking. I tried to get all the names. I've probably done 14 or 15 of these. They're all available at kslsports.com. I'm going to do it for the next month now, that maybe a little bit less, 3 weeks as we lead up to the draft. I'm going to try and have 30-plus of these so you have exactly who the Jazz could be looking at, a full breakdown from me, and how they would fit on the Jazz. That's why I'm doing it, as opposed to just sending you to other websites. I want you to know what they would be able to do for Quinn Snyder and this Jazz team. But these guys are projected to go a little bit ahead of where the Jazz are drafting. I don't think it's unrealistic that any of them, though, could be there at number 23. Earlier this week, I broke down Jalen Smith. He's the floor-spacing big man out of Maryland, 6'10", 225. He's a sophomore. He averaged 15 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, a couple of blocks a game. He's really, honestly, he's a pretty good rebounder for the college level. He moves weird. He's a good athlete. Like, you watch him jump, it's clear he can do it. He's not Greg Ostertag or something like that. Like, he's a very fluid athlete. He's a little disconnected between his upper body and his lower body, and maybe he just needs to get stronger, and that's clearly one of the knocks on him as he gets pushed around playing defense in the paint. But he's got great timing as a help side shot blocker, so he could probably play the four next to Rudy Gobert. He's got a really pretty jump shot. He's not a pure three-point shooter like a Frank Kaminsky or a Kelly Olynyk who steps out and only shoots like that. He's more of a Serge Ibaka, more of a Jamichael Green type of player that can kind of play both front court positions and have both of those guys have in their career, that also block some shots, do the dirty work, grab some defense or grab some defensive rebounds, I should say, and then hit the three. He's interesting. Right now, some projections have him in the teens, some have him in the late 20s. That's kind of what this draft is doing. You're going to see a lot of that. He could very well be on the board for the Jazz at 23, and he'd be interesting. He could fit with the Jazz, and I think you like that. And he could play in the front court in time, probably not next season, but maybe, because he can shoot the ball, next to Rudy Gobert as a power forward, and he can play next to Bojan Bogdanović as a center. So it's interesting. It's intriguing. He could provide defense off the bench. It's why you like him. It's why teams like him. He's a rim runner. He can get to the line and dunk. He takes a little bit of a little while to get off the floor. He's not a super quick leaper like Amari Stoudemire. So he's a decent lob threat, but he's not going to be catching lobs the same way that Rudy Gobert does. So worth reading about him. I wrote that up at kslsports.com. If he's there at 23, the Jazz would have to take a very serious look, because he fits a lot of what the team does. He's not my favorite prospect I've broken down, but he's pretty interesting. Next guy also falls into that category as a sharpshooter, but he's a guard, 6'6", Desmond Bane, out of TCU. He gets incorrectly labeled as a 3-and-D wing. He's not. He can play defense, don't get me wrong. He's a very adequate defensive player. He's really smart off the ball. He's kind of always in passing lanes. Not saying he's like jumping passing lanes and getting easy baskets going the other way, but he just gets a ton of deflections because he realizes, hey, I'm supposed to rotate. He rotates on time basically every time. And then when teams try and throw the ball, they honestly hit him sometimes on accident because he's in the right place. But he should be able to do that as a senior who's played 4 years at TCU. His skill is he's a great three-point shooter, 43% for his career on 600 three-point attempts. It's a really impressive number. He's got a goofy release on his shot. It almost looks like a push shot. Not quite Sean Marion, but certainly not some of like the great three-point shooters that we see, Kyle Korver or J.J. Redick or those guys. It's kind of a throw. It's just kind of weird. You should watch it. I posted the video at kslsports.com for Desmond Bane. The results are impossible to argue with. I mean, he shoots really well from inside the three-point arc, 49%. He's a good free-throw shooter at 80%. Rebounds the ball six a game, hands out 4 assists a game. Like, all of his numbers are cool and really good, and then you watch him play, and it's just a little wonky. He's just a little weird. And TCU is a weird team to get guys from. They don't put a ton of talent in the NBA. It's not saying they don't belong or don't get to, but it's not kind of traditionally a powerhouse, and sometimes I'm a little hesitant on those types of players. But he gets a shot off fast. It goes in a lot. He's really smart. Everyone seems to think he has great character. The Jazz look at that a lot. He could make some sense. He's the type of guy, and I wrote this in my article, he fits what the NBA is doing, maybe more than he fits what the Jazz are doing, where the Jazz like to go get blue chip prospects with long wingspans. He's got a 6'4 wingspan, and he's 6'5. So his arms are short. He's got kind of the alligator arms, but he still is like an okay defensive player. He doesn't finish on top of the rim, though. There's one crazy dunk he had this season where he dunks over a guy, and it looks like, you know, Tom Chambers dunking on Mark Jackson. It's worth going back and looking at some of his plays, and if you could open that up a little bit with some space. But he's a good prospect. He deserves to get drafted. He's worth taking a chance on. He can't dribble, and I always worry about guys who can't dribble. Royce O'Neal really can't dribble, and you see how much it limits him. That could be an issue because Rudy Gobert can't dribble. Jazz backup center right now, whoever it is, even if they bring in Derek Favors this offseason, can't dribble. And then Royce O'Neal can't dribble. You can't have that many guys on the floor who can't put the ball on the ground and get to a new spot, because then you just pass a lot, and a lot of guys say, well, we don't have to collapse on anyone because you can't start the blender because no one can get into the paint. Someone has to be able to put the ball on the floor. And, you know, Jordan Clarkson can do it, and Donovan Mitchell can do it, and Mike Conley can do it, and Joe Ingles can do it. But if you have too many guys on the floor at one time, you can't really get that blender started because you have to break the paint a couple of times really to get it moving. So there's issues there where if he can't dribble at the NBA level, he's just a standstill shooter, and those guys lose their value much more quickly than a guy who can put it on the floor and attack like a, you know, a Jamal Murray or something like that. Speaking of Jamal Murray, a guy who's kind of gotten some comparisons to him. They're not perfect, but I get why people are doing it. The draft prospect, the final one I broke down yesterday, Cole Anthony out of North Carolina. He might be the most highly touted high school prospect that I'm writing about. Maybe Isaiah Stewart from Washington, I think, was the number two overall prospect, and he might be available where the Jazz are drafting. In fact, he really probably should. But Cole Anthony's probably the next guy. I think he was number four overall recruit in the country. Went to North Carolina. His dad's Greg Anthony, who's an NBA analyst and been around the league for a long time, played forever. Cole is 6'3", about 200 pounds, 190. Freshman out of North Carolina. Projected to be late teens, early 20s. That's right where the Jazz are. You only need one or two teams to pick somebody else that they have an eye on for a guy like Cole Anthony to slip to 23. And he's hard to pass on if he's there just because he's so talented. He's got such an NBA game, though the results didn't always show that. No, it's funny. You'll say the results. What results? Well, he scored 18 points a game, grabbed almost six rebounds, and handed out four assists. Those are really good numbers. That's awesome for a freshman at North Carolina, where even though they were a miserable team this year, every single team in the ACC or whoever it is, they played Alabama, is going to step up and try and prove their best against North Carolina, you know, so they get other teams' best. So Cole Anthony putting up those numbers with the target on his back as really the best player on that team is important, but it's also worth noting he only shot 38% from the floor, which is really bad, 34% from the three-point line, which is fine. That's better than what Donovan Mitchell shot in college, and 75% from the free throw line. The problem with Cole Anthony is that his shooting percentages make a ton of sense when you watch him play. He takes so many bad shots. He forces so many looks. He doesn't really look for his teammates as much as he should, despite averaging four assists a game. He could have averaged seven assists a game, 14 points, and probably seen his field goal percentage up around 45 and locked himself into the lottery, and he didn't do that. So he's tricky. Yeah, I get why teams like him. I won't be at all surprised if someone drafts him at 12, 13, 14 and just says he's too talented. He's got too good of a bloodline. He seems like a very good kid. People seem to like him. And he's worth taking a risk on. I also wouldn't be surprised at all if he's there at 23 where the Jazz are drafting, and the Jazz could even pass on him just because kind of the super inefficient scorer is hard to have in the NBA. And then, you know what? The league is full of, or actually I should say the G League, is full of guys who really score the ball and don't do it efficiently or didn't do it efficiently in college. That's not uncommon. That's not hard to find. Guys who want to hunt their own shot are a dime a dozen. You've got to be able to do more. And that's where his six rebounds and four assists are really impressive. But he's got to be willing to do that and still get his shooting percentage up and still be able to hit the three at a better rate than 34%. And be willing to not be a scorer at the next level if it doesn't work out right away, if he can't be that guy right away. And there are guys like Jimmer Fredette that could never figure out how to not be a scorer on the floor. and had to step up and be bigger. And then there are guys like Donovan Mitchell, who wasn't as good a scorer as Cole Anthony in college, but had somewhat similar percentages. Donovan was much better inside the arc than Cole Anthony was at that 38% number, but really figured out how to be a much more efficient scorer in the NBA and has turned into a star. Cole Anthony's going to have some of those same questions. He doesn't have a freakishly long wingspan, just a couple inches longer than his 6'3" height, so he doesn't have that ability to finish on top of the rim the way Donovan does, even though he's an absolutely freakish leaper. He can really get up, could be in a dunk contest at some point. He's got that type of athleticism. Really quick first step, really good handle. It's not flashy, but he can get wherever he wants to on the floor. Has a lot of cool release points on his shots, like, you know, knows how to hit runners and take runners and puts them up at interesting angles, but they don't always go in, and that's the problem. And then he's a pretty good defensive player because of his athleticism. He's got a strong body. So he's got some pluses. There's a reason why he's going to go in the first round. It's hard to ignore his production at North Carolina. It's also hard to ignore his bad shooting percentages. So that's kind of Cole Anthony, and yeah, I'm going back and forward on him a lot. You're probably a little tired of what I'm saying. It's because that's exactly who he is, and that's what teams are going to have to struggle with. If the Jazz sign Jordan Clarkson again this offseason, and we know Donovan Mitchell's back, one of those guys is going to have to be a pure point guard or more of a point guard when Cole Anthony's on the floor if he wants to see the floor at any time, unless he's playing next to Mike Conley, and then you've got kind of a small backcourt. He doesn't show enough of his point guard skills willingly enough to be that guy. But his upside is through the roof. He might be the highest upside pick, along with a guy like Jaden McDaniels that the Jazz could have sitting there at 23. So I like him. If Jazz fans, if the Jazz drafted him, it certainly wouldn't be something to be unhappy about. In fact, any of these guys, Cole Anthony, who I mentioned right now, Jalen Smith, Desmond Bane, none of those guys are bad options for the Jazz if they get picked at 23. They're not my favorite options, but they're certainly not bad options. All right, really quickly, just so you know how the draft's going to work, I wrote about this. It's going to be a virtual draft at the ESPN studio, so you're not going to have anyone in New York like they have in traditional years. Players are going to be sitting in their front rooms or with their agents or wherever, the same way we've seen with the NFL draft in this past season. Major League Baseball did the same thing. You're going to have Adam Silver at the ESPN studios with Deputy Commissioner Mark Tatum, who does the second half of the draft, the second round, where the Jazz actually don't have a pick. But it's going to be done virtually, just to give you an eye on that. I also wrote an article if you want to check it out. I want to get to your mailbag questions. But should the Jazz draft for best fit, need, or best player available? Fit is culture. Need is obviously what you need to have on the floor, which right now is kind of everything, or best player available. Because the Jazz have a good starting five in Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, Joe Ingles or Royce O'Neal, whoever you want to start, Bojan Bogdanovic and Rudy Gobert, the Jazz are fine. They don't need to draft a starter right away. If you had a guy who could step in and play right away and it's great, good for you. You won the lottery, no pun intended there, but by finding a guy at 23. But if you just want to get best player available, like you've got a green light to do that right now, because you're probably not going to get a rotation piece anyways, even if you draft a senior like Desmond Bane. I mean, he might be able to step in and play a little bit right away, but you're probably not counting on having a rotation piece available at 23, regardless if they're a freshman or a senior. So go out and get the guy who's going to be best for you by the end of the season or into next season. I mean, 2021, 2022, or the season after that. Get the guy who you think is going to have the best long-term potential, because you've got a very good starting five right now. And there's plausible issues where Rudy Gobert's gone off the team by next offseason, so you could go and get a center. Or Mike Conley's gone off the team by the next season, so you could get a point guard. Or Donovan Mitchell moves to point guard, so then you need a shooting guard, so you can draft a shooting guard. Joe Ingles is aging quickly, so you could use another 2-3 kind of combo forward if you wanted to. You could always use depth at the wing position, where the Jazz don't really have a big forward that can play multiple positions. So you could go out and get a guy like Jalen Smith or Jaden McDaniels. There's an argument to be made for the Jazz drafting everywhere. There's not one specific position of need. So I think the Jazz are really in a good spot to go for best player available and the guy who they think is going to fit their culture the absolute best. So that's what I would say when it comes to best fit for the Utah Jazz. All right, let's get to your mailbag questions. Looks like we've got a couple here. I'll address them quickly. Miles Newby, would the Jazz be interested in Frank Jackson as a backup point guard? Who are some backup options in free agency? I wouldn't rule out Emmanuel Mudiay yet, certainly for the Utah Jazz, though I don't think he's necessarily probably their top option. I don't think they would hesitate to go and look at adding a different point guard who can step out and shoot the ball a little bit. Frank Jackson's still kind of a project. He just has not ever kind of panned out for the Pelicans. And I think he's a fine player. I think he has a chance to still develop. He's so young. I wouldn't rule that out. But at this point, he's probably not what the Jazz need. They probably want a guy who can step in and play a little bit more immediately and help the team. One name I put out, I wrote an article on 32 different options for the Utah Jazz that could step in and potentially be affordable and play next season. Matthew Dellavedova, he just might be washed at this point in his career, but he's got an Australian background, could fit with Joe Ingles in that sense, probably knows how to step in and play a little bit right away if he has to. He's not a bad option there. And you're talking about the fifth guy who shouldn't be getting many minutes, and that's probably the type of player you're looking at. Pat Connaughton, maybe he's more of a shooting guard. He could potentially come in and fit right away. He's not going to command a ton of money. Courtney Lee is a name I like coming out of Dallas, is another guy I would look at potentially for the Jazz to go out and sign. Otherwise, there's not a ton of great backup point guards, and there wasn't last year, which is why the Jazz ended up with Emmanuel Mudiay. It's just like not the most fully available position in free agency this year, the way I actually think there's a ton of big men like Derek Favors if you want to go out and sign those guys, even some power forwards if you want to go out and sign one of those guys. There's not a great collection of point guards, which actually could lead the Jazz to drafting a guy like Trey Jones out of Duke, who I've talked about a little bit. And I called my shot earlier this week. I said if I had to make a guess right now who the Jazz were going to draft, based on the player, based on what I know about the Jazz, I would say Trey Jones is probably the guy I would look at the most. So those are a couple of names I would look at. I wouldn't rule out Emmanuel Mudiay, but certainly a guy like Trey Jones in the draft could also step in and play right away. Probably not Frank Jackson, but I could be wrong. He would fit in Utah. He's obviously from here. Coming from Dan on Twitter, would the Jazz be interested in Leandro Bolmaro, even if he likely wouldn't come over till next season? I don't know if he's a draft and stash guy. I think he just sent a 3-year deal, I want to say, if I'm remembering my reading correctly. And I'll tell you the truth, I just haven't watched very much of him. I've watched the highlight clips that are available on YouTube. I'll try and find a couple of full games of them, and that's how I break down these players. They could. I don't necessarily think that's going to be their favorite option, draft and stash. You know, Boston makes a ton of sense because they've got like 3 first-round picks this year. Draft and stash a guy, low risk, high upside. And even if he doesn't come over, like if you have 3 first-round draft picks, it's not great, but it doesn't kill you. Remember the Jazz drafted Ante Tomić, who's like a good player, should have been in the NBA, and he never came over. Now, that was a second-round pick, and he didn't have guaranteed money and kind of all those protections there. But you don't want to get into a spot, especially with coronavirus right now and just not knowing what the future is going to look like. You may not want to get into a spot where you're drafting a guy without a guarantee that he's going to come over, or that he's going to come over and then you have to develop him further. The Jazz right now may want to get their hands on a guy more quickly with a chance to start working with him, even if he's not going to be playing much next season. So I don't think it's terribly impossible. I don't think it's super unrealistic, but I would think there's probably enough things right now, or enough areas right now, where maybe the Jazz wouldn't look at a guy like that. Ryan Sampson on Twitter. What are the team's plans to build off the Black Lives Matter work done in the bubble? My guess, and honestly some of it's a guess and some of it we know, they're working a ton with the push for voting. They just worked with Voto Latino, which is about helping getting the Latin community out and voting more within our community. They've sponsored and supported a couple of those. So it goes beyond just the Black Lives Matters conversation. It certainly has to do more with getting involved in the community and getting people registered to vote. I think you're going to see more work from the individual players probably at some point, because teams are going to back off of this. I think the teams felt like they had to make some concessions to be willing to do it. I think some were more than willing to do it. I suspect the Jazz were pretty happy to step in and work with their players and work with the community, because Gail Miller's been fabulous doing that, and they've got a pretty community-involved front office. They don't go and hide. You know, there's some front offices that don't want to really have a part of their community. They kind of just like owning a team, and they don't even live in the state, and they kind of disappear. That's not what Gail Miller and the Jazz do. She's very involved. They're very involved. So I imagine there will be continued opportunities to work with the community. I think they'll find a way to do it, whether that's under the name of Black Lives Matter or not. I'm not sure. And then a lot of it's going to fall onto the players. But good question, Ryan. Thanks for the tweet. And then Dan on Twitter, which of the rookies do you think is most likely to be in the rotation next year, if any? A couple of the guys I would look at that I've written about now. I mentioned Desmond Bane, because he's a 4-year player, has an NBA-ready body. knows his role, really smart, shoots the three. So those translate right away, right? Like he can play defense. That translates right away. I would look at a guy like him. Maybe I'm a little too high on Tyler Bay, who I've mentioned a little bit in previous podcasts, and I actually wrote about him as well. Sorry, I'm pulling up my article on him really quick. He might be the best defensive player in the draft. He's really freakish off the ball. He just eats up so much space. He's a guard forward combo. Can probably play power forward. Could probably play shooting guard in a pinch if he had to. Though he really isn't a scorer. He shot over 40% from the 3-point line this last year at Colorado, but took like 30 attempts. Like he just doesn't have it yet. But he's such a good defensive player. He's not Matisse Thybulle, who we know was in the rotation out of Washington playing for Philly this year. He's not that level of a defensive player, but man, he just wreaks havoc. It's pretty crazy watching him play. He just absolutely blows up play after play after play off the ball. And is good on the ball, too. He can guard twos, threes, fours, maybe even can guard some point guards. So he could get in there. He doesn't really help you offensively other than catching lobs, which isn't the worst thing. So he can probably play a little pick and roll. He'd have to show he can pick and pop to really become a good, effective player on the offensive side of the ball. But Tyler Bay is another name I'd mention. And again, he's a junior, so he played 3 years for Colorado before he stepped up. And he reminds me a little bit of Andre Roberson, and that's a lazy comparison because he comes out of Colorado also. But that does tend to be how we look at these players. How did they play in college? Where did they come from? Do they match up similarly? That's the type of name I would talk about. Xavier Tillman out of Michigan State. I want to say he's a junior as well. Also got good defensive chops. That's a name that could potentially step in and play. Cassius Winston, a senior out of Michigan State. And yes, there's a theme. I keep talking about seniors and upperclassmen, juniors. Cassius Winston just knows the game so well, can play pick and roll really well. He could step in and potentially play next year. I would rule out Trey Jones, who I mentioned, the point guard, if the Jazz felt like they needed a fifth guard. He's so smart, played big games every single game because he played for Duke, so he knows what that's like. He could potentially step out and play if he had to. Otherwise, maybe Isaiah Stewart could get a few minutes as a backup big, but he wouldn't be better than Tony Bradley next season. Of the guys I've looked at, those are the names I would probably mention the most, but Desmond Bane would be my top, followed by Tyler Bay out of Colorado. Those would be my two guys that would probably circle the most for guys that could potentially step in and play right away. I think that's all the questions I got. That is. So appreciate everyone tuning in. Went about 30 minutes here, which is exactly what I'd like to do. You can always follow me on Twitter, Ben's Hoops. You can DM me throughout the week. I actually got a couple of DMs this week that I responded to right on the spot. If you don't want to wait for the mailbag every week to answer those questions, I'm happy to respond to you that way as well. Or if you just don't want to see your questions asked on Twitter, I'm fine to answer them behind the scenes as well. That'll do it for the Jazz Notes podcast. Read me as always at kslsports.com. Find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. We'll be back with you again next week.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on kslpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.